Hey, before we jump into the show, I wanted to give you a heads up that my free YouTube strategy class is available right now on demand at thinkmasterclass.com. On the class, I reveal the one YouTube strategy we use at Think Media to generate over 330,000 views every single day. So if you're new to YouTube, this will help you start right and avoid mistakes. And if you're a YouTube pro, this training will help you multiply your growth. This class is 100% free and you can watch it now on demand at thinkmasterclass.com. Now, let's jump into today's show. If you change your title or your thumbnail, does YouTube re-rank your video? Does posting shorts hurt my channel?
If you want subscribers, if you want views, if you want monetization, the answer to all of that really is only make better videos.
What is your advice for small YouTube channels to grow right now?
Generally speaking, what we've seen across YouTube is that people who post both long form and short form tend to have higher engagement than people just doing one or the other.
On today's episode of the Think Media Podcast, we are busting YouTube myths with a YouTube employee, Renee Ritchie. Renee doesn't just work at YouTube, but he also has 328,000 subscribers on his own channel. So it's time to lean in and learn from this YouTube expert. Do yellow icons impact search and discovery on YouTube? When ads become limited for some reason or any number of reasons where you've got green on monetization, feels you're like, breath of fresh air. But if it turns yellow, is the distribution of the video throttled down in that scenario?
So the way that it works, the best of my understanding, is that discovery, search and discovery is not governed by ad-friendly guidelines, yellow icons or green icons, but it is still governed by community guidelines. And oftentimes, what I think confuses people about this is that separately, ad-friendly guidelines will determine this video is not safe for ads, and community guidelines will determine, this is like, for example, adult content. And if you're flagged as like adult or mature content, you wouldn't be distributed to an all-ages audience because YouTube really is meant for 13 and up. And we wouldn't want a situation where like your 13-year-old sits down on a sofa and a bunch of adult videos or mature videos pop up all over the home screen for them. So those videos are like, if you subscribe to it, if you're searching, like that's sort of covered with that. But because they often happen at the same time, I think there is some belief that the yellow icon triggers it, but really it's two systems responding to similar signals.
If you change your title or your thumbnail, does YouTube re-rank your video?
So not exactly that way, but YouTube, like the algorithm tries to follow audience response. So if you change your thumbnail and your title and the audience responds better to it, the algorithm will factor that in when it comes to recommendations, and it'll probably rank higher. Like its distribution might go up and it'll probably rank higher based on that audience feedback.
So it's not a trigger in that moment, but what many people do in hour one, hour two, hour three, they perhaps feel like their title or their thumbnail could be resonating better. They're like, I'm a 7 out of 10. I feel like this should be like a 3 out of 10 at least. They make a pivot there. And since you're maybe still in those early hours, it's the fact that audience behavior has changed in response. Maybe that drove click-through rate up, maybe even a more accurate title made people stick with it longer. And that pivot that you just made is affecting rankings. But it's not that it changed and Google was like, all right, I'm just going to re-rank you. But it was because audience behavior shifted.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said more accurate, because I think some people think, I just need to get them to click and they'll make a more sensational thumbnail or a more sensational title. But then that will no longer, like the video will no longer deliver on the promise of those things and people will start abandoning it faster. So you'll see CTR go up, but retention tank, and then the video will perform worse. And like, but I don't understand. My CTR is way up. It's like, yes, because you no longer are giving them the video that matches the sort of packaging you put on it.
Does posting shorts hurt my channel?
Generally speaking, what we've seen across YouTube is that people who post both long form and short form tend to have higher engagement than people just doing one or the other. Obviously, there's going to be exceptions on both sides. Some will do much, much better. Some will not do better, maybe even worse, but just broadly speaking. And because shorts tend to live in the feed and long form tends to live in the home, on the homepage, there's not that much overlap. So you put up a new long form, people are going to be enjoying that in the homepage. If you do a new short time after that, people will be watching that in the feed. It's not going to conflict with it on the homepage.
Does taking a break from posting videos hurt my channel? Many are worried. I got to keep up one a week, two a week, but I'm tired or family stuff's coming up. And if I stop for 4 weeks, if I stop for 2 months, is it going to negatively affect my channel?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. It's something that we think about a lot as well, because we do care like desperately about the well-being of creators. And when we've looked at it, we haven't seen any sort of universal negative impact. Broadly speaking, it hasn't made a difference across a wide range of channels on YouTube. Again, there'll always be outliers. Like Corey Kenshin shows up, takes 6 months off, lands number one on trending every time, over and over again. And there's probably some people who, you know, maybe they take some time off and a new personality shows up in their space and just wows a lot of people and captures a lot of audience. Neither of those happen a lot, but there probably are some on both sides. I think it also depends, again, on your personality. Some people see their YouTube channel as like their business. It's like their mom and pop restaurant or their mall kiosk. And like, what would you do if you had to take time off from that? And it might be that you plan to have someone fill in for you, or you batch a bunch of content so that maybe it's not going up at the same pace, but you still have a steady stream of content. Or maybe you put up post, like you schedule community posts. You do something to keep engagement because you just want to manage it. You don't want to leave anything to chance. It feels better for you. You're more comfortable managing it. Other people don't even want to look at it. They just like, I'm taking a vacation. I'm gone for a month. I'm not even looking at my channel. I think Tom Scott famously had guest hosts every year when he took a month off. So it really depends like on what your personal stress level is like and how you want to handle it.
Does an underperforming video hurt my channel? If I have like one really bad video, should I be depressed, discouraged, and should I give up?
No, not at all. YouTube tends not to look at individual creators and channels. We tend to look at videos and topics. So just because one video isn't the best performing video, even if it's a complete dud, it doesn't mean the next video isn't going to be the best video in the history of YouTube. And it would be bad for everyone involved if we didn't give each and every video a fair shot at like the maximum potential it could possibly have. Like imagine the baby squid right before baby shark hadn't performed well. Baby shark would never have been this huge video. So just it doesn't really work that way. But I also think that sometimes we over-index on performance. Like on my channel, I know an iPhone review is going to do gangbusters. It's going to do really well. An accessibility or environmental or educational video isn't. But those are really important topics and a really important audience for me. So sort of like in Hollywood, the big blockbuster movie gets the actor like big blockbuster box office and numbers. They can go do the art house film. The big videos sometimes gives me the opportunity to do the smaller videos that I really want to make. I just go in knowing they're not going to be like 1 out of 10. And I go in knowing they're going to be 9 or 10 out of 10. But I still think they're really important for me to make.
Does linking off platform hurt my video performance? YouTube allows you to link to an approved website during your end card. But of course, people link in their description, maybe to their own website, to other social media platforms, perhaps to their book on Amazon or any other number of things. Perhaps they even put a link in the pinned comment. Does that ultimately hurt my video performance?
So I think like the way to look at that is weighting. So like some people immediately put a card when a video starts saying, go watch my other video. And they even say that, like, if you missed this video, go watch it. And then people are going to leave, like if people are interested, they're going to leave your video. Like you chose to sacrifice that video to send them somewhere else. And I've gone through this on my own channel because I have sponsors in almost every video. And I always think like, that's why I always do the sponsor spot at the end. Cause I figure like they've watched my video. Now they can just go if they want to, but that means I'm not going to get them to watch a second one of my videos. And we know binging, like people watching like one or two or three more is a great way to get into their watch history, which is a great way to get into the recommendations and be shown more of my videos. So I think all of these are like choices. So if you have a link to another video, topmost, like the most attention, pinned, whatever, you might start getting up, like build up that session time, build up that binging of your content. If you choose to make that an affiliate link, you're sort of sacrificing that binging, but maybe that's going to make you a ton of money. So these are all like, I think like more business decisions, especially at the creator side.
Do timestamps hurt or help my videos? Timestamps, aka chapters, aka time codes, that are clickable, and are they helpful, or could they ultimately hurt my performance metrics on YouTube?
I think it's a bit of both. Like, I think we worry about them as creators because we think people will hop around and that'll hurt our total watch time, maybe cause a bunch of dips in our retention. But I think they're also good for users, like good for viewers. And where a viewer might think, this is boring, I'm just going to cancel out of this video, I'm going to abandon it, and you see like retention just drop at that point, they might see the chapter and go, oh, but this one looks really interesting to me. So instead of just leaving the video, they're now going to go and watch a later section, and maybe they'll keep watching from that point. I think like ultimately you want a video that everyone watches every second of, but realistically there might be videos that you make that have certain sections appealing to certain people. So I think it's sort of like a trade-off. You're trading off the potential of them jumping around for a reduced risk of them abandoning.
Is there a correlation between key moments when videos rank on Google and the video's been kind of chopped up in terms of a search term and being found on Google and the metadata of timestamps or chapters that are added on YouTube?
I'm not sure. I think for most people, probably not a huge deal anyway, because external traffic typically isn't, like, even if like Google is 90% of your external traffic is maybe 2 or 3% of what discovery is. So I don't think it's like anything that would move a needle, but I also don't know if Google's doing anything different there than YouTube does.
And you touched on this a little bit earlier, but to put it bluntly, does posting time really matter?
No, I mean, there might be certain categories where it does matter. Like if you're doing the stock market and like the opening bell is at 9 a.m. and you know, like you need a video out by 9:30. Like there might be situations where your content is bound to external time clocks. But when we've looked at it, for the majority of videos, if you're willing to wait, like, of course, if you put a video up in prime time, it's going to get more views faster. But over the course of, and like, that's like for the first 24 to like 36, maybe 48 hours. But if you look over the course of 2 weeks to a month, we've seen almost no difference in how, like, where videos end up in views, depending on where you, what time you post them.
That was technically our lightning round Mythbuster sequence of questions. But now going back into some topical questions, touching on hashtags, should I ever use hashtags in my titles?
I think like you don't have to use hashtag shorts, for example, anymore. The system is smart enough to know if it's vertical or square, and under a minute, it's a short. But there might be times where you think a topic is so much more, has so much more gravity around it than you do as a creator, or you do as like a like an individual video, that you want to tie into it. Like maybe it's a coronation, or maybe it's like the World Cup, and you think there's just so much attention that you want to show up on that tag page. That's basically what it does. Like you click on that hashtag and you see more videos around the same topic and you think that there's so much interest, people are going to do that and you want to show up there. Other times you might think, you know, I'm a big enough creator, my videos are interesting enough that I don't want to risk sending people to a hashtag page. I'd rather they watch another one of my videos afterwards. So again, it's one of those things you've got to weigh the risks and rewards.
So personally, using a hashtag in a title is different than adding three hashtags to the description, which show up above the title and are clickable. Would you opt for adding them to the description, keeping the title clean with, if you will, less chance of clicking away? Or is it a case-by-case basis?
Yeah, I think like it's more of a macro. Like, do you need hashtags to begin with? I agree with you, they're cleaner, not in the title. If you think like it's so important that it's wicked obvious, it's the most important thing about the title, then you could do it. But I would be more like what benefit do I get from including the hashtags?
Gotcha. Talking a little bit about money, how much does YouTube keep and how much do creators earn? I read on Google's page that if you turn on watch page ads, YouTube will pay them 55% of net revenues from ads displayed. I recently though did some math, and this may have changed. There may be all kinds of different factors. Essentially that the creator gets 55%, YouTube keeps 45%. We saw in between January and April this year that actually YouTube had earned more like 61% and we had earned 39% based off, I think, our RPM. And I also know that RPM gets a mixture of different revenue sources. But kind of keeping it at a broad level with the question, is that just a general rule? And would that be perhaps normal? Calculating, and that I was calculating the difference between CPM and RPM. CPM being the top line money collected for the channel over a period of time. And then RPM on that video format for the period of time. To be clear, this was just long form videos. What do you think that discrepancy is, and what maybe would be a way? Is actually technically this mysterious, or is there anything that we can sort of count on as creators?
I think like it shouldn't be mysterious, and it should be 55%. I think like it's 55% of monetizable views. So there'll always be like some views that are claimed by a rights holder, for example, like maybe not on your channel, but on some people's channel. And there might just be like, just because there's a slot on your video, it might not have gotten filled by an ad. So like these are just monetizable views that were actually filled by ad inventory. And then there's also like despamming that goes on. For example, like there's some level of spam views or spam clicks or something like that that might be happening, and that could be like discounted at a later date. So I think like if you look at when your AdSense actually comes in, that's probably the cleanest version of it, because we try to give you data in real time, but because it's in real time, it will sometimes be updated. Like you might sometimes see views, for example, go away. Like, what happened to those views? And it's just that there was a bunch of spam accounts or bots that we removed from the system, and then their views disappeared with them, or their likes disappeared with them, or their ad clicks disappeared with them. So I would, if there is any discrepancy, I would first go and just look at AdSense and see what your total was there.
I want to better understand RPM, and let me know if my thinking is correct. There actually isn't technically a way to measure. We can see CPM. That's going to be the total amount of, and it may be a general number, like you said, you're just feeding us kind of real-time data. But that is what a particular video or a channel overall is earning the total amount of money collected. But of course, YouTube's from an advertiser that wants to advertise on videos. YouTube takes some, the creator gets some. Music's rights holders may get some, all that, whatever. So then RPM is the amount we actually keep. However, the RPM metric could also be influenced by super chat, super stickers. And the more active those other monetization forms are on a channel, perhaps the more diluted that number could be if you were just trying to figure out how much a video earns. Is my thinking correct there?
I think so. I have to be candid with you that I'm the worst when it comes to business. Like, I'm very bad at it. I hired like a business manager instead of an editor because I know how to edit videos. I don't know how to do anything with business. So you're probably a much better source of that kind of information than I am.
Gotcha. And for the record, it would be awesome in the future to even just have more granular, meaning how much of my videos earn. That's kind of the question. Would be like, could I look at YouTube separate from, and regardless of, I'm just curious, regardless of super chats, regardless of channel memberships, regardless of anything else, if there was a way to break those things down, that may be there, but that's just a personal ask.
Any features, anytime, let me know and I'm happy to pass them on to the team.
A little more ninja question that came in from Josh on Twitter about ads. If you just let YouTube do its thing with ads, so we just check the boxes, and if the video is longer than, say, 8 minutes, in this case, he's saying if it's a 30-minute video, I'm letting YouTube manually place the ads. If I let them do that, does YouTube share the content more is question number one, or does it matter in terms of search and discovery?
Yeah, the search and discovery system deliberately has no knowledge of ads. So it has no knowledge if you have ads turned on, turned off, what kind of ads, because we didn't want that to be an influence. We want the pure is the wrong word, but we want like recommendations or search and discovery to be its own thing. So whether you monetize it or not and how you monetize it has no effect on search and discovery.
If a 30-minute video, I let YouTube do the ad placement and they placed 5 ads in there, or if I manually went in and decided to place 10 ads on a 30-minute video, will the viewers be shown each of those ads no matter what?
I'm not sure about that. It might also depend on ad inventory at the time, whether all those slots can be filled. Not something I have any experience with. But I also think just as a creator, I personally like to manage the experience. I got to think about it like from the audience, what would make the audience happiest? I think maybe it is good. Maybe I should go and look at it again. But I always think that I made the video. I want to design the ad experience the way I'm designing the video. And that is more time consuming and cumbersome, but it just feels like that's my creative vision.
So you recommend you personally?
Yes.
Manually add them. And I've seen an hour long video on your channel. So you might be thoughtful thinking just like a Hulu show that there's going to be maybe ad breaks that are relevant, but you're going to be choosing those yourself manually.
Yeah. I don't have a recommendation one way or another because I'm not like, I don't know enough about it. And maybe the computer would beat me. I'm not sure. I just feel like it's part of my artistic vision to put them in.
Do you have any tips for a creator that wants to increase their CPM or RPM?
I mean, I would just like totally non-facetiously say watch channels like yours. I think like you have like, there's so many different categories and topics and very different RPMs and CPM rates. And maybe it's as simple as picking like a topic that you're still passionate about, but has a much higher CPM or RPM, or maybe it's about identifying times of the year where people are more interested in advertising against the topics that you make. Like it's a market. Like it is a real market where there's ups and downs and changes, and it is way beyond anything that I can understand. But there's channels like yours that do a really, really good job of explaining all that.
There's a new AI audio dubbing feature coming. Can you give us a little preview of what that is? Is it already here? And what could that mean for creators?
Yeah, it's allowed. It actually was like a startup within Google and now it's been brought over to the YouTube side. So they're in beta right now. You can go and sign up to get on the waiting list for it. And they're doing like a couple languages of AI dubbing. And it's hopefully going to be built out to the point where you have multiple languages and it offers like a full range of dubbing services. I think that's really interesting now because we've seen like Mr. Beast, Jimmy has his own dubbing service, Creator Global, and there's a bunch of AI startups trying to figure that out as well. And it just seems like a really interesting way. To his point, like 15% of the world maybe speaks the language that your video's in, but if you do 2 or 3 or 4 popular dubs, maybe you start reaching 50%. If you do like 5 or 6, maybe you reach 70%. So it's just one of those ways to make your videos more accessible to more people in more places.
So what is this called and how do you sign up for the beta?
I think it's allowed.com, A-L-O-U-D, but it might be .google. I'll double check what the link is, or if you just Google like allowed dubbing, it's still in beta, but it's a service anybody can sign up for to be on the waiting list.
So allowed, A-L-O-U-D, dubbing for everyone, allowed.area120.google.com. We'll link up all resources in the show notes, of course. But excited for that. Do you think that YouTube will add the ability to split test thumbnails?
So it's something we've said we're working on. Like, I think we started talking about it last year and we talked about it again this year. And it's something that's really interesting. We want to do it, of course, like in a way that really benefits creators, that provides substantive value, where you get statistically significant responses from it. So I think we're still working on it now. And I think the team is doing really, really interesting work, and no timeline for it yet, but it's being being actively pursued. I can't wait for it.
Is YouTube planning on doing anything regarding spam comments? One of the big things I'm sure you're aware of is a lot of soliciting, typically of crypto. So they take your avatar, they take your channel name. There's no check mark. And obviously, is check mark reserved for 100,000 subscribers?
Yes.
So to get a check mark to get verified on YouTube, you need 100,000 subscribers. So for a small creator, of course, the goal here is they say, hey, WhatsApp us. And then they try to typically do something regarding crypto. I always know that your role and YouTube employee roles in general can get the hammer from creators. I can't even imagine the technological implications of the platform, the size of YouTube, but just kind of playing in the middle. I know that there was Graham Stephan almost had his channel being threatened of being deleted and had a countdown to it for something that was not an action of his own, but something from people thinking he was soliciting people for money and all of the above. What's happening in regards to the fast-moving world of spam comments and solicitation at YouTube?
Yeah, so something that we work on all the time is something that I've been involved in since I joined YouTube, because it was something I saw on my channel. I wanted to help as much as I could. And I think we started working on impersonation scams. That's when you would see that WhatsApp or you'd see like Telegram me, and it would be like on different channels, like you want an iPhone on like a tech channel, or you want a car, all those sorts of things. And I think we've got a better handle on that now. So if you go to your settings and you turn on stricter moderation, I think you'll see a good deal of that is no longer present. On my channel, anecdotally, I think it's gotten rid of all of that kind of comments. Like, it's done a really, really good job. We're always updating it. It's a game of cat and mouse. So they escalate, and like, we work on it. And now we've heard like there's other kinds of spam that people are dealing with, and we're paying much closer attention to that. And it's just, it really is just a back and forth battle between highly, highly motivated spammers and us trying to stop them all the time.
What advice do you have for creators who are frustrated by limited advertising?
So I think it's one of those things where, and I by no means, like, I don't mean to sound callous about this at all. Like, I think about this deeply and a lot. Like, I didn't have to deal with that on my channel because it was tech reviews. It was like phone reviews and laptop reviews, and that comes nowhere near advertising friendly guidelines. But it's also not something that's really unique to YouTube. It's something that artists always have to think about. For example, we used to have explicit and clean versions of albums because the explicit versions couldn't get radio play. And if you decided to make an explicit version, maybe your fans loved it or you felt like it was your artistic voice, but a lot of radio stations wouldn't go near it. And now you hear all the time about Hollywood studios and movies and negotiating between like an R rating and the dreaded NC-17 rating and the PG rating, and because the distribution could be greatly affected, or the amount of people that your video gets shown to could be greatly affected. And I never want anybody to have to, like, in a perfect world, nobody would ever have to choose between artistic vision and commerce. But that's sort of historically always been the issue for creators. So if you have a huge video coming up and it's really important to you that you get every bit of money you can from it, maybe just like spend a few minutes re-looking at the advertiser-friendly guidelines and say, like, do I really need these curse words? Do I really need to show this scene and tailor it more for like that PG, like whatever the movie equivalent of that audience would be? Like, I want all ages to see this. I want like maximum exposure, and then tailor it for that sort of an audience. Or if you're like, you know, this isn't about money for me, this is my vision, you know, I need to say these words, I need to show these scenes, then just like realize that you've made that choice as an artist, and that maybe it's not going to be as commercially viable because it'll only be available for adults, or you might be turning off some percentage of the audience who just doesn't like curse words in their videos or something. So I think like it's one of those things where artists and commerce inside us have to keep fighting it over.
Is there any good place to get great data about YouTube? How many channels there are? Also, perhaps how many channels are actually active, have uploaded recently or significantly, how active they are. I love seeing letter from the CEO or updates from YouTube that will say channels that are over 1 million subscribers is up 15% year over year, which is really cool and encouraging information, but sometimes somewhat vague, understandably. How many channels are monetized, the amount of monetized channels. And so I know that YouTube does pass along information, but I'm just curious for you if there's anywhere you look that maybe I don't know about or people don't know about in terms of just getting data about channels and YouTube overall?
Yeah, I think there are, like, I don't know of any like official sources other than what you just said, which is like the letters from Neil now, like the CEO letters, or sometimes like the YouTube blog will be focusing on something specific like that, and they'll be able to surface that information. Otherwise, I think there's some companies that offer it, but you know, I have no idea how accurate or not they might be.
What is your advice for small YouTube channels to grow right now?
So I think like if growing is what you want, and it may not be, like, I think there's a lot of people who just assume everyone wants to grow on YouTube, where some people just really want to have their like a place for their artistic vision. But if you really want to grow, I think it really is about identifying like three or four topics that you're passionate about that you'd be able to make hundreds of videos on for like years and years and years, because nothing else matters if you just don't want to make the content anymore. And then just be willing to try, like, test those videos, make a few of each, see which ones resonate with your audience, figure out which ones perform the best, and then go all in on them and start packaging your content so that people who watch one video, there's always like a fast follow video that they can watch, and you can get them to start binging it. So like they're finding my channel through this video. I'm going to direct them right to this video. I'm going to deep dive them into this video and get them watching in sets. And the more you can make it so that not only do people love your videos, but you always give them more videos like that to love. It's almost like that Simpsons, the same but different every week analogy. And then the last bit is something I'm going to completely steal from Jimmy and Marques Brownlee, which is make better videos. And I think you see people like spend a lot of time on metadata or a lot of time on very obscure analytics, because making better videos is hard. Like, it is soul crushing, ego suppressing work sometimes. Like, you have to be brutally honest with yourself. And it's easier to go mess around with SEO or to go mess around with something else, because that has no like personal cost to it. But if there is nothing that making better videos, like, well, if you want subscribers, if you want views, if you want monetization, the answer to all of that at the end of the day really is only make better videos. And for me, it was about consciously like looking at every video, making a list of what I could do better, and then picking one of those things and working on it over and over again, whether it was lighting or storytelling or presence or everything like that. And until I got to like diminishing returns, and then picking the next thing. I think like people like you see that all the time. Someone will say, I'm not growing and I've done everything you've said. And you go to their channel and they've done like 1% of what you said. And like, they need better thumbnails. And like, I had Jimmy once just open my channel and say, your thumbnails are terrible, your titles are terrible, and your videos are boring. And I'm like, yes, that is true. And even at his level, he's like, I don't want to know why my videos are good. I want to know why they're terrible, because I can't fix good. Tell me everything that's terrible about them that gives me something to work with. And he still like is hungry enough that cares so much about making better videos. He wants your harshest criticism on it. I think that's like, if you really want to grow, you have to sort of invest in that.
You mentioned earlier how the views that shorts are getting are actually kind of more like impressions, but you kind of quoted that even for newer channels, YouTube will perhaps give a new short or a new channel a certain amount of views, impressions, to see how the content performs and perhaps to see if it satisfies viewers. So along the lines of the opportunity for small YouTube channels, what should creators know about? I think I heard Mr. B say that YouTube is still actually the most generous algorithm on the internet. And that channel starting right now can grow from scratch. You don't have to, it's only the channels that started 10 years ago and that have millions of subscribers. Is there algorithmically anything we should know opportunity-wise for a small channel or a new channel?
Yeah, so we do have a team that's job is to try to like surface new channels. Like sometimes I think you'll see, like you'll go to your homepage and you'll see like a video from something you never heard of and it has like 23 or 300 views. Like, why am I, that's actually kind of interesting. I want to see that. And that's the sort of thing that we're doing. We're trying to work to find like really good content from new and emerging channels that we can surface that we still think you'll have a high likelihood of wanting to watch. It does nobody any good if we surface videos that you're not going to want to watch and you're going to ignore. But we want to find like those new videos that are going to be enjoyable to you and give you the chance to enjoy them. And then hopefully that helps those channels grow better and faster as well.
That's encouraging that you have a team dedicated to serving small channels. And we certainly see in our community channels starting from scratch that are experiencing some big results. It definitely does come back though to, as you mentioned, making better videos. And I've noticed, I watch a lot of YouTube on my smart TV and I have noticed being recommended content from very small creators. I'll be like that. One, I like it. Like, it gets my attention. I start checking them out. And then I'm also surprised that, again, it's not just the big channels. So that's incredibly good news for small creators. Is search-based content still a big opportunity for creators this year?
Yeah, I think in general, like if you don't know where to start and you can optimize something for search, it's a good way to get into somebody's feed. Like, you're going to want to convert them into browse traffic or suggested traffic. So you're going to want to have, again, like an easy follow video. Like, you get them in through search and you answer their main question, but there is like another part of that answer or a deeper dive or something that's extra value to them that's going to get them to watch that next video. So I look at it more like that's a way to open doors for your channel, but you're still going to want to have like a full home for them to walk through once they get there.
What is the worldwide opportunity for YouTube right now? We're recording both in the US here right now. We know that YouTube is a massive opportunity, like in 100 countries, available in 80 languages. But from your vantage point, what is kind of the global growth, global opportunity on YouTube?
I think it's just that it's always getting more exciting, more interesting. There's always more creators. I think short form video in general has lowered the barrier of entry. Like we used to have Me at the Zoo, and that's basically a short. Like in today, that would be like, look at me, I'm just doing something. But then like the getting into long form kept seeming like it's just harder and harder. And it's like Marquez has robots and like there's like 400 cameras on this video and it can seem daunting. But with shorts, again, everybody can just grab their phone and go and make a video. And some of those videos perform ludicrously well, like just incredibly well. And they can then learn all the basic skills and then not graduate, but start making long form videos and off of what they've learned from telling stories and like framing things and all of that. So I think like the opportunity now is just, it's trite to say it's bigger than ever, but I think especially like multi-language audio and all of these new features, podcasts, it really is just still growing.
Renee, you've been incredibly generous with your time. You took a lot of questions. We've mentioned a couple of times that in the show notes, people can connect with you and everything, but shout out where people could follow you, what they can find. I know there's a couple different YouTube creator channels. You've got the Creator Liaison one. So what are all the different places we should know to connect with you on the various things you're up to?
Sure. So I'm at YouTube Liaison on Twitter and on YouTube. And there's the Creator Insider channel. We have a new series of videos there, interviews. We had Matt Halperin, the head of community guidelines, talk about what policy is like on YouTube, which I think people you were talking about before would find really interesting. Like how does YouTube think about create, enforce, update policies? We had Dave Rosenstein talk about copyright and creator music. Todd Beaupre was just on last week and we talked about how the algorithm works in a multi-format world and also like how YouTube supports smaller creators. And a lot of the myth-busting shorts that we do are all up on there. And then the Creator Liaison channel, I just started a new series where I ask creators for like one piece of advice. So like, I asked Eric, how do you blow up without spending money? And I asked Mr. Who's the Boss, how do you make funner, like more enjoyable videos? And they all give like really quick answers based on their channels.
I love it. Well, Renee, I appreciate you so much. Thank you for coming on the show and look forward to connecting in the future.
Thank you so much. It was so great being here.
So thanks for checking out this episode of the Think Media Podcast. Reminder, this is actually part two of my conversation with Renee. So if you missed part one, definitely go back and listen to it. And if you enjoyed this episode and learned something today, please rate or review the podcast on audio. And if you're watching on YouTube, smash like, and let me know one of your aha moments in the comments section below. And if you have any other questions that were not answered, because we're definitely going to have Renee back on the show in the future. Subscribe so you never miss an episode of the Think Media Podcast, and I will connect with you on the next episode.